We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Let's get some mailbag questions, Brian, because obviously right now Notre Dame is – you've got signing day is a little over – it's December 21st, so it's a little over 3 weeks away, the early signing period, which is really – the early signing period is now the new signing period. I mean, especially for a team
like you're going to sign like one kid in February maybe.
Right. No question about it. So that's kind of where Notre Dame is focused on right now. They are going to look to – kind of have their class done, but also now December becomes portal month and there's going to be a ton of kids jumping in the portal. Look, here's what we're not going to do at IB. We're not going to respond to every kid that jumps in there. But today we'll answer some of those because what people have to understand is 90 some percent of these kids that are jumping in the portal are either A, just not going to be fits in their name, or B, are jumping in the portal because they already know where they're going. You know, and another part of it is, and we'll kind of get to this question here, Ryan, because somebody brought this up. Antoine Porche Rideau says, "Hey, Brian, are any of the Texas A&M players who have they're now in the portal? They've lost now four kids to the portal last 48 hours. are on Notre Dame's list for guys they'd go after in the transfer portal?" Antoine, thing you have to understand is, I know what we see the highly ranked kid. He might even had a Notre Dame offer. Most of those kids went to A&M with the promise of something that Notre Dame was not going to promise them in high school, and they're not going to promise them now as transfers. That's just what y'all have to understand. A lot of these kids that take the money coming out of high school that leave after a year are going to look for another NIL deal. They're not saying, "Well, I got my money that one time, I'm good now." They're going to look for another NIL deal. Notre Dame's not going to play that game, number one. Number two, as we've said before, it's really hard for Notre Dame to get undergrads into school. Now, I will say this. I do think it's easier for them to get freshmen.
Yeah.
Kids who are freshmen. But I don't know if that's necessarily the route we're going to see Notre Dame go a lot, because I think their goal is going to be more for, let's plug some holes that we have on our current roster with kids who have a year or two left. Now, if it's a kid they recruited out of high school that they know that they have an established relationship with and that kid jumps in a portal, then you may see it. But most of the names that we're going to hear in the portal are just guys that are just not going to be options for Notre Dame.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
That's just the reality of it. So
if they got three kids that were all grad transfers and one was a quarterback, one was a receiver, and one was a pass rusher, would any sensible person complain? You got to feel needs.
No, right.
I mean, it's really that this is a rare roster where Notre Dame is truly on the tipping point. We can bitch about the kids they lost because of NIL and recruiting or whatever, but that stuff is going on everywhere. It's wild for every. Nick Saban is losing kids
right
over that, literally. So I can tell you that from women down south. That is no bull. So Notre Dame is very close, and they're just, you know, they're a quarterback away from being 11-1 pretty much every year. And then, you know, even 12-0, you know, just a great game against USC or Clemson or whatever. And then you can be there. That's where the portal needs to come in, as Driscoll's talking about. If you can get a pass rusher, I think that's the biggest need for next year, a pure edge rusher, which everybody wants. That's super hard. I'm not saying that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But if they get that to go with Benjamin Morrison, taking away the other team's number one,
right?
Good luck outscoring Notre Dame once they have a quarterback. Right. They're going to get a quarterback. I'm completely confident because the kid's going to know he's going to come in and play.
Well, we're seeing that too, Brian, is we're seeing kids looking at Notre Dame's roster and saying, like, they actually have a lot. Like, I think the people that are most down on Notre Dame's roster are a lot of Notre Dame fans. I mean, Notre Dame could go win the national title next year, and fans of other teams are going to be like, they shouldn't have been there, and they don't have players, and they're slow. I'm talking about, like, when you look around the country, when I talk to people that I know in the scouting industry and people that I know in the coaching business, they're like, I don't think people realize how much talent Notre Dame has. The thing that's been lacking is, I think, consistently at corner. They've had some good corner tandems, but it's just in spurts, right? It's like a couple years here and then a couple years there. And then, you know, and it's not consistent, right? But what I think about, your corner recruiting has been elevated significantly under Mike Mickens. But, you know, when you kind of look at it, Brian, you know, man, kids are going to look at this roster and say, boy, they got great offensive line, lots of tight ends, receivers that can play. They're going to watch Deion Coles and be like, where's this kid been all year? You know, they look at the running backs thinking, man, you give this kid a quarterback. We talked about this with Kenny Minchie. That's part of the reason Kenny Minchie gave Notre Dame another look. He's like, man, you know, they got the number one receiver class coming in the country. They're loaded at running back, and they're bringing in two more dudes next year. You know, they're bringing in a bunch of great offensive linemen. Like, you know, give me that. I could be the missing piece. There's a lot of quarterbacks around the country looking at Notre Dame like that. And then Brian also said they're also going to look at the current depth chart and be like, yeah, I can do something with that, you know?
Especially once number 15 is healthy. I think that'll
– Oh, yeah.
Look,
yep.
You don't have to be a very good scout to figure that one out.
Right. But apparently it took Notre Dame a while to figure it out.
No comment.
Anyway. All right, let's get to – there's another question, too, speaking of this, the portal stuff. Jeff Fluke said thoughts on the start of the mass exodus from Texas A&M. We're going to see this happen a lot more than people think. Because these kids – I have a
couple of comments on that. Yes,
I do. I'll let you follow up, Brian. People have to understand when these kids get bought like this, and I'm not even necessarily inferring anything nefarious because it's basically the rules now and they're not going to do anything about it. But these kids aren't going to these schools because they see a vision of, I want to go there and win a championship and do all that. They're saying, you're going to offer me how much? Cool. So when they get there and things don't work out their way, and now you've got the – it's a double-edged – so it's a double, like, negative. Like, these two whole horrible things have happened at once, right? A completely unregulated NIL with this one-time transfer portal. So yep. Kids are going to get their payouts right away, and then they're going to say, okay, I'm going to get back in the portal again next year, and guess what's going to happen? People start throwing me new offers again. And you're going to see this happen a lot to these schools that are just throwing money at kids to buy them as high school kids. It's going to happen a lot.
Here's the thing. I'm in the Houston area now, and a few of the people I know have direct ties to A&M. It's just small world. And one of my buddies, his daughter is at A&M right now, and she loves football. And I said, well, what's the vibe there? I said, do all the students hate Jimbo? And she's a real nice girl, but she kind of looked at me. She goes, everybody wants to go. Like I was throwing a spider at her. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. She just hearing his name out loud. Mm-hmm. So something is a goofy there. I don't know what happened because obviously at one point he was a good coach. They won a national title at Florida State. Not debating that. Something has just gone flat out sideways.
Yeah.
This might be a 30 for 30. I'd be shocked if it's not actually.
Yeah.
In about 10 years.
How the best recruiting class of all time
just went into the toilet.
Fizzled after, yeah.
I'm not going to name names. I already know one kid that's leaving that is going to irk a lot of A&M fans if he's not already in. I got to check and see. But it's the kind of player that changes programs. That can't happen all at once. And like you said, several of these kids all at once. I can tell you from being somebody who's deeply involved with 7-on-7, the elite players all talk to each other, not just in the same community, not just from the same state. But if there's an elite D lineman in South Florida, which they always have one, he'll know a guy in LA. He'll know a guy in Dallas. He'll know a guy in Ohio. And if they end up at the same school, they will make group decisions. It's weird. They make more group decisions about stuff now. And I don't know why that is. But if something goes sideways, it can get ugly. If A&M lost half of that class from this past year, it would not surprise me from what I'm hearing.
Yeah, same.
The only other thing I'll add to this, and this is totally up for debate, and I don't have a personal opinion. What Driscoll just said, these kids were getting money, not just A&M, but God knows how many different schools. Louisville's trying to do it with this class, etc. How many schools are going to take transfers and throw the bag of money at them for a second time when they took money and then ran?
Right.
I'm curious to see
that. Sadly, a lot will. I mean, these teams are so debt. First of all, some of these collectives, they don't even have like any control over, you know, and that's what's getting insane about it. But yeah, a lot of these, because here's what's going to happen. They're going to have to go somewhere to replace the kids that they're losing in the portal. 100%. And that's what's going to make this thing so incestuous. It's just going to be like, and it's about value. Some of these kids are smart. Do I have more value to these teams knowing I have 2 or 3 years left, or more value if I wait here and then be a one-time transfer, right? Where the shine isn't off of me yet because I was only here 1 year at whatever school. Whereas if you're sitting on the bench for 3 years, the shine is off. I mean, that's what I think is going to happen. I mean, I see it. I've been pretty kind of right about this stuff. I've nailed this stuff so far. I kept telling people this transfer portal thing is not going to be a thing that creates parity. It's going to create even wider divisions.
Yep.
Because Alabama, the USCs, the Ohio States, the teams like that are going to start taking the best players from Kentucky and Vanderbilt and Indiana and all these other kind of schools. That's what's going to happen, right? And you know, it's the NIL, we knew what was coming there. I mean, that was incredibly – I mean, it'd be a rocket science to see how that was going to go down with some kids. But the fact is not every kid – it's always been true, Brian. You and I have been doing this a long time. Not every kid is looking for that. And that's what not every big-time kid is looking for that. And it's also – some of it's regional, right? I mean, there's some of it's family. You know, there's a lot of different things that are going to factor into this. Notre Dame will find their way, you know. And as Notre Dame players start getting more and more and more, which they're getting a lot already, and Notre Dame's – what I think Notre Dame is doing with the NIL, Brian, more than anything, is start encouraging these kids to advertise the deals that they're getting more, you know, because Michael Mayer's making a lot of money. The Adam Eolas are making a lot of money. Kyle Hamilton made a lot of money. I mean, Braden Lindsay made a comment. He's like, hey, I'm real happy with how NIL is going. Right. I mean, you know, so they just need to advertise. Hey guys, you're going to get yours at Notre Dame. It's just, we're not going to promise. You got to earn it. You know, you're not just going to get it because.
Go to class. You
know, yeah, right. Exactly.
Imagine that. You're going to.
Yeah, I know, right? So it's happening. It's happening. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. But that's why you can't go the Texas A&M route. If you're going to buy players, I think actually USC is doing it the right way. Buy kids that you're getting as one-time rentals because then they come and they go and they're already ready to play. You know, like you don't got to worry about developing Jordan Addison. And if he doesn't play in a year, you're mad. He's going to transfer. You get him for 1 year. You know what you're getting. He's going to play for you for 1 year and then go pro. I think that's a smarter way of doing it than what A&M did. Because as you said, Brian, they're going to go from the number one class to the number 50 class in a year when you look at what's left. Like if you re-rank their class after a year, they're not in the top 25.
It's insane.
That's how I think it's going
to play. This might be the weirdest recruiting flux in a 24 to 36 month period, because their class before that was really good too. And some of those kids are going to, it's unbelievable. I honestly don't know if it's out of the realm of Jimbo got fired this year, because that the pockets there are, I know he's got a ridiculous, the oil money at A&M is something that cannot be defined with.
Yeah. Wins.
So he's terrible. Yeah, but then they go out and beat LSU yesterday too. So
Yeah, which I loved, by the way. That totally made yesterday a much better day for me. Made it a much, much better.
Yeah, when I saw that score, I'm like, this is hilarious.
Yeah.
Because they almost they almost got beat by UMass the week before, if I remember.
Right. Well, they beat UMass by 17 and beat LSU by 15. So very, very similar.
College football very, is very so similar. Wild. It's why it's fun though.
Yeah. And just so people are clear, when I'm talking about Notre Dame possibly looking at another DB, it's more of a corner, and it's related to the current roster. So before anyone's like, oh, Peyton Bowen, has nothing to do with Peyton Bowen. Nothing to do with Peyton Bowen.
Smart to mention that. Smart to mention that.
Because I know how people are going to take that. It has to do with the current roster. Okay, just so we're clear and people don't go start. Driscoll said, you know, it's not what I said. TJ Stalica, I'm going to get this out because he has said this about 35 times. Brian, think we target the Cincinnati cornerback who decommitted today, J.Q. Hardaway. I don't know a lot about that situation. He did not decommit today. He is a freshman at Cincinnati. So he
ended up in the portal.
So I don't know a lot about that one. I don't know if he's a kid that Notre Dame recruited or Notre Dame knows. I'll do some asking. But again, We're not going to – if all we do is address every kid that enters the portal that people like, that's all our shows are going to be from now until signing day.
Awful.
Right? I mean,
please just, don't do that.
It's just – we can't do that. If we hear something, I promise you we'll let you know either on the message board or on this platform, especially on the message board.
JQ is one of the longest kids I've ever met.
Yeah.
He's a freak.
He's 6'2", right? Isn't he like really long? He's a pretty ripped up kid too, if I remember correctly.
Remember the picture I sent you of him standing next to me?
Who that was?
Yep.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, okay. It was about a year and a half ago. He's freakazoid.
Yeah. Zach Martin says, is Billy Shrouth probably sticking to guard? I know he had limited center experience. Look, with a kid like Billy Shrouth, Zach, that's a very good question. It's going to be about what gets him on the field the fastest. I mean, that's really what's going to come down to. If the path to playing time was faster at center and he was your next best interior guy, you'd move him to center. If the path to playing time – and that's what they did with Jarrett Patterson. I mean, Jarrett Patterson was not recruited to play center. He was a tackle, maybe a guard, but it was more about, look, we're loaded. We're going to be loaded for the next couple of years. There's one spot open, and he's our fifth best kid. Let's move him to center. So I think guard is the plan as of right now, Zach. But if they're in a situation where they need a fifth starter, it's a center, and he's clearly the next best kid, I think they'll give him a shot to play center as well. He was a guard in high school, guard tackle in high school. I think he was actually a tackle in high school, tackle and a guard in high school. Played some center in one of the All-Star games and looked good, I thought. But that's kind of going to be – I think guard right now is where they're – because, like, right now they're going to lose both of their starting guards next year. Zeke Correll's got at least 2 years left. He's got at least 1 year left, potentially two if he wants to take a sixth year. So guard's really where the battles are going to be. Zeke Correll was – after the first few games, Zeke had a rough time. But by about the North Carolina game, he started to settle down. And then in the last month of the season, Zeke Correll's been really good. So center right now is locked down for at least the next year, maybe two. Guard is where the battles are going to be. And I think that's where you're going to want Billy Shrouth is to be a guard, because that's where, you know, they love him. The staff is very high on him. You know, he obviously missed the spring because of injuries, but this is going to be a big spring for him because he's a very talented kid. And he's that combination of athleticism, length, and power that this staff really likes. really likes. He was my top lineman last year's class, Brian.
I'm kind of curious to see if he can compete for a starting job next year. I don't think it's out of the question. I know it's hard to be a starter as an interior guy as a sophomore.
Yeah.
But you don't think so?
That's he's definitely gonna be an option. Definitely.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. No question he'll be in there. No question. He'll definitely be in the battle. Will he win it? I mean, Andrew Kostofik's going to be in there. Rocco Spindler's going to be in there. I mean, there's Michael Carmody may be in there. There's going to be kids battling for that job. But they're definitely going to give him a shot as well. And look, we've seen Harry play young kids before. And not just Quentin Nelson. Like, I'm not going to go the anomaly, you know, like Quentin Nelson, Zach Martin. But, like, we've seen Robert Hainsey played as a freshman. Tommy Kramer started as a redshirt freshman. I mean, we've seen Jarrett Patterson started as a redshirt freshman. We've seen plenty of kids do it. It's not like it's a rare thing. But and a lot of times when kids haven't, it's because, like, Liam Eichenberg didn't start earlier in his career because he was blocked, you know, by this kid named Mike McGlinchey. Who's a pretty good player, you know what
it
I mean?
Is so what it is.
Exactly. Exactly. Got some portal questions down here, and some other things. Michael with a question says, Brian, with Fickell leaving Cincinnati for Whiskey, and I'm gonna ask you about your thoughts on that here at the end of the show, Brian. Would Amari Snowden be someone Notre Dame would look into? Thanks. So, Michael, good name. I like Amari Snowden, but they evaluated him the first go round and he wasn't they just decided they liked the other guys better. I could see them maybe making a run at him, but that's not one of the names that I've heard so far. I've heard a couple names and Amari's isn't one. I think they're more looking for kind of maybe a guy that could be a slot guy. Cause right now they have a lot of outside corners. You know, they have obviously Christian Gray and Micah Bell in this year's class were outside guys. Benjamin Morris and Jaden Mickey are ideally outside guys. Although I think Mickey could eventually be a nickel with some technical work and things like that. I think they'd kind of look for a guy that's maybe a little bit more of a slot type of guy is in the cornerback position. So I think that's more of where you're gonna see. And then we had another question about where's it at here about the Ozzie Mack. Do you think Notre Dame will make a run at the quarterback from Georgia Tech who just entered the portal? No. He's talking about Jeff Sims. I really hope not. I know Ryan really likes him. I think that's more so Ryan's an NFL draft guy, right? He likes the tools.
He's looking at tools.
Yes. And Jeff Sims has a big arm and he's athletic, but he's just not a real good quarterback, in my opinion.
And he throws at teams with the wrong color jersey.
Yes. That was going to be my other thing. He throws a lot of interceptions. And you can kind of chalk it up his first year to him being young, but he had 13 interceptions in his first year as a starter. He had seven, so that was in 2013 or 2020. He had 13 picks in 10 games. 2021, he had 7 picks in 8 games. And this year, he had 3 picks in 7 games. So he has had 23 interceptions and he's only played 25 games. Like, he's not going to come to Notre Dame and all of a sudden be a 30-10 guy, right? I mean, it's just there's way better options out there, including some on the current roster. Like, he's a more experienced, turnover-prone version of Tyler Buchner. I mean, if you don't like Tyler Buchner, I don't know why you'd want to recruit Jeff Sims, right? And I think Tyler Buchner's a more natural passer than Jeff Sims in, you know, from what we saw in high school. So there's a lot of quarterbacks that I think are going to hit the portal that I would look at a lot. I think there's going to be some really interesting names in the portal this year. Jeff Sims is definitely not one that I would look at. Brian, I'm glad that you had the immediate reaction. Like, no. Yes. A very strong no for us. Here's a question down here from Gideon Rosa. I'm just curious about Viper, portal, and recruiting. So they will definitely have Viper as a position that they will key on. It wasn't a great Viper year in the national recruiting, Brian. Obviously, they missed on Keon. You know, they made runs of like Caleb Herring and Shandavian Bradley. But outside of those guys, there's not a lot of Vipers out there. There's a lot of big ends in this class, but not a lot of Vipers. And so I think that kind of factored into it. And then they missed on the guys that they did like. So I think right now they're focused on the portal. But I think that there's also some guys in the roster that they really like and that I really like. I mean, Josh Burnham's a kid with a very high upside. You know, Jordan Patel has another year. Aiden Gobira can play that position. I wouldn't be shocked I wouldn't mind giving Maris Luafau a shot at Viper next year. I think he could probably do some things better there than, you know, inside. But look, Josh Burnham, I think, has got a really high ceiling like a really high ceiling.
That's the kid I'm excited about.
I'm very curious if he can make a jump in spring ball, because Ryan, we saw him, we've seen him at games, but when we were, Ryan Roberts and I were at Syracuse game, and it's a basketball arena, right? So press box is really low, and we're on the Notre Dame side, and we're watching him go through warmups. And we've talked a lot about on this show, Brian, Sean Davis and I have talked about it in shows, and you and I have talked about it in the past. Notre Dame needs to get more of those guys. And when you look at him, like, yo, that dude just moves different than everybody else. They're getting more and more of those guys, right? The 2015 team had a lot of those cats, right? Will Fuller, Jalen Smith, CJ Procise, guys like that. This team is, they're starting to get there now. Like Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah was that way for Notre Dame in recent years, but they haven't had a lot of those kind of kids. The current freshman class has a lot of those kids, and the 2023 class has a lot of those kids. Jalen Steen's that kind of kid. I think Nolan Ziegler's that kind of kid, right? Benjamin Morrison's clearly that kind of kid. Another guy that's that kind of, Tobias Merriweather, Jadarian Price before the injuries, that kind of kid. The other kid that's that way that's not getting talked about a lot now, because I think people are, look, you come as a freshman, you don't play, people forget about you. They assume you're not any good, and they move on from you. And I got to remind them, Quentin Nelson played this many snaps as a college freshman.
Yep, he redshirted. Okay?
Exactly. You know, Will Fuller caught six passes as a freshman. Equanimee St. Brown caught one. Miles Boykin caught zero, right? Like, you know, a lot of kids don't necessarily make plays, especially when you've got Isaiah Foskey and Justin Adamiola in front of you. It's going to happen. But there's a lot of people I know around the program that – this is how twitchy the kid is. Even though they had moved him to defensive end and they were building him up to physically be defensive end, they have used him at linebacker in practices at times this year. That's how well he moves. Yeah. Just for need that week, you know, because if it, for different things. But he's a kid that there's a lot of people in the program that are really curious to see what he does this offseason, because there's a lot of twitchiness there. A lot of, now they got to still do their due diligence, look at the portal, because he hasn't played yet. He's got to emerge from there. But there's a lot of people doing this at Notre Dame thinking about him stepping up this year and maybe becoming that guy. And I would encourage you to go watch the last play of the game against Boston College and watch – him, Aiden Gobira, and Jalen Snead on that play.
They just all watched the ball.
Yes. And Josh was from the backside, but Aiden just kind of comes off, you're like, okay, that's impressive. And then Jalen goes, whew. And then Josh Burnham from the backside is just, you're like, that kid's built like a Viper, but he runs like a Mike. And that's what you're looking for. So I think that's also why Notre Dame didn't feel the need to panic and take a kid at Viper in this recruiting class. And also another kid that could maybe – Preston Zinter and Drake Bowen are two other kids that could maybe play there if the need arose, especially Preston Zinter, who's a pretty good tight end. So they'll have options there. And that's why they didn't panic and say, gosh, we just got to find a Viper some way, somehow, you know, after they lost Keon, because you've got some talented options there, in my opinion.
Here's something else that's interesting. When I talked to Keon last and I asked him about depth charts and the kids that he'd seen at practices, he mentioned Burnham to me as the next guy at Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. I had no information on it. Keon brought that up to me. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was interesting. Keon knows he's good.
Yeah.
And he sweats no fool. He knows that he could bypass most guys.
Right.
And he mentioned Burnham for whatever that's worth.
Yeah. Well, that's worth something. It's worth something. There's no doubt. Got a super chat down here from Nick Baker. Thank you, Nick, very much. Hi, guys. Not sure I'm stating this question right. What makes recruiting sites target certain kids, i.e. Peyton Bowen over Jaden Osbury, for example? I assume you're meaning like Peyton being ranked high and then other guys being ranked low. Honestly, Nick, I've given up trying to figure out what goes to these people's heads. I think a big reason why Peyton Bowen is getting a push right now is twofold. Number one is they're properly ranking him now. Number one, I think he's kind of becoming more properly ranked.
Yeah.
And then number two, there's a push of he's a kid that's they're viewing him and pushing that he's looking around. So it's a story. It's clicks.
100%.
But I mean, he's a five-star kid. Jaden Osbury, I mean, there's no story there anymore. He committed to Notre Dame. He's not going anywhere. What's the reason to bump him up, right? So you're just going to see him continue to drop and drop and drop and drop because there's no story there. And you'll see most of the kids that jump in the rankings in the end of the year are either uncommitted kids or kids that are committed to Alabama, Ohio State, and Georgia. You see those kids get big bumps. I've pointed this out last year. Alabama signed about seven or eight kids last year that, like, the next rankings after they committed to Bama, all of a sudden they had the skyrocketing ranking. Like, I'm sure Alabama, that's a total coincidence, right? Sure.
Alabama has an enormous fan base. Coincidence?
Yeah.
No.
No, of course not. Of course not. So I think it's just storyline, but I think with Jaden Peyton Bowen, for example, it's just him getting properly ranked combined with the storyline. There's no storyline with Jaden Alsbury, in my opinion. There isn't. And like Drake Bowen, there's no storyline there. Like Drake Bowen, as a senior in Indiana, plays mostly against upper-level schools, doesn't even play. He got like one game all year, I think, against a school of his level. He's a tremendous baseball player. And then he has, Brian, I'm trying to remember the stats that I sent to somebody the other day. His stats are just nutty. Let me find it real quick. This was his senior year stats. Now, let me find it here. He had 144 tackles, 5 sacks, 2 interceptions, 4 forced fumbles. He also rushed for 1,784 yards and 26 touchdowns. I don't care what level of football you're playing. When you're 6'2 and you're 230 and you can run like that and put up that kind of number, you're a top 50 player. But he's not. He keeps getting dropped in the rankings. Why? He's a white kid from Indiana, and he's committed to Notre Dame. There's no reason to bump him up. That's why. And, you know, some people may not like me saying that, but that's the reality of the situation. That's the only reason. There's no story there. If Drake Bowen decommitted from Notre Dame, which he's not going to do, not going to happen, hypothetical, you'd see all of a sudden his rankings would go up because there's a story there.
Yeah, even if he just took a visit to Kentucky or something, whatever
or school. Clemson or Clemson or Auburn or one of the schools that were recruiting him, yes.
Yeah, whatever yeah. It was. Yeah, I mean, he – absolutely.
Yeah.
But there's no clicks. He visits Notre Dame like every other week.
Yep. Let's get to some more questions. You got a super chat from TJ Fallon. Thank you, TJ. Brian, that play made me so happy. Snead and Josh look so fast. Future is bright. Yeah, I mean – And Nolan Ziegler, too. I mean, he wasn't near the ball, but you could just see, like, that kid's like 6'3 and a half, and he just moves different. And that's what I love about the 22 class. And as athletic as the 22 class is, the 23 class is even more athletic, just from a number standpoint. I mean, it's a – Jaden Alsbury, Brian, is a kid that I just don't think – I think because of the drop in the rankings and that he's not a real social media-involved kid, you just – he decommitted, and you don't hear a thing about him for the next several months. I don't think people appreciate just how good that kid is and how dominant he is at a pretty good level of high school football. I mean, he did you see what he did to Arch's team and Arch this past weekend?
They destroyed him.
Oh, yeah. That kid is really good.
I met him at the Under Armour event at IMG. He doesn't say boo. He does, you know, he just nods very, very, very much as a grown kid.
Yep.
Yeah, he doesn't want – media attention, which is not helping his ranking at all.
Yep.
If he would have been still fooling around and visiting in Arkansas and LSU and Texas A&M and stuff like that, Auburn, his ranking would be higher, period.
Yep, absolutely. And look at the schools they beat him for, A&M, Michigan, LSU. You know, there'd be a lot more buzz. And it's sad that it's that way, but it's just that way. That's the reality of it. Got a few more recruiting questions here and then a couple others. ND Estimate Trucking LLC. Brian, Rico Flores and the Texas Tech kids seem pretty similar in your opinion. What's the biggest difference and who can see significant playing time first? I don't think they're that the same, though. I think Rico is more of a pure outside guy. Rico is one of the best high school route runners I've seen in the last few years. I mean, Rico is a really precision route runner. I think Rico is a little stronger. As a player, I think Rico's more of a pure outside guy that can play slot. This kid's more of a slot that can play outside. I think this kid, where I like this kid more, is this kid's a better after-the-catch guy. You see it as a punt returner, as a kick returner, catching quick throws, whereas Rico's more of a traditional receiver to me. So, and who can earn the fastest playing time? I mean, they'll both get a shot. I think Rico's foot injury might slow him down a little bit. But I think – look, all five freshman receivers, if healthy, if they get Caleb Smith, all five freshman receivers would have a shot to earn a playing time next year. So I'm going to be 4 scholarship receivers next year. I mean,
it's just math.
Yeah, exactly.
It's sad, but it's just math.
Yeah, thanks, Del. No question about it. Shanti Irishman says, who is someone in the portal that could replace Michael Mayer and Foskey, assuming they both declare? I get where people are coming from with the tight end thing. Mayer's going to be gone. You know, you may lose a kid from the current roster. I don't think that there's necessarily a need right now to do that. If anything, I would say go find a kid that in the 23 class you can land later, flip late. You know, I mean, look, they don't necessarily potentially have Kevin Bauman, potentially have Kane Barong, Mitchell Evans. You've got Holden Stace, Eli Raridan, and Eli Raridan got hurt early enough to where he'll be back next year at some point. And then you've got Cooper Flanagan coming in, who's a big kid who could help out as a freshman as a blocker.
Not worried about tight end.
Yeah, I don't feel the need for that. There's other positions that have a greater need. Now, if you're in a situation where, you know, let's say Brock Bowers calls and says, "Hey, I want to come to Notre Dame." Okay, we can have that conversation, right? But other than that, I think they're fine.
Agreed.
Okay.
Sometimes it's not that complex.
Yeah, it's not. Brian, would Austin Osbury be someone that would interest you if he were to hit the portal? I really wanted him out of high school. That obviously is Jaden Osbury's older brother. I like Austin Osbury. I like him more as a safety for me. I think he's more of a safety type of kid. If he hit the portal, would I be interested in Austin Osbury? Absolutely, I would. And not just because he's Jaden's brother. I like him. I think he's a good cover safety. I do. I like big corners, Brian. Like, you know, and it's not that he can't play corners. I think he fits safety better. You know, I like big corners that can cover and moving them to safety. That to me is the future of where I want to see defensive football, right? Or get a safety like Peyton Bone, who is a safety but could go play corner if you needed him
to. He can play running back, receiver, whatever.
Peyton Bone can play wherever he wants. But, like, if I were to say, hey, they're going to move Peyton Bone to corner, you wouldn't be like, oh, man, that's dumb. I don't think – they'd be like, oh, okay, cool, right? I want guys that can cover, and as many guys as can cover as possible. And that's what limited this defense a little bit. Is outside of Xavier Watts, especially when Brandon Joseph playing the way he was, who do you really see at safety that's a cover guy on the current roster? That's it. Xavier Watts, that's really it.
Xavier showed me some things last night, and that's a good sign. But to your point about Osbury, look, Notre Dame is not dynamic at the safety position by any stretch. It's still open moving forward. They should at least consider their option. That's all I'm saying.
That is a position, Brian, where I think you're going to see Peyton Bone come in and get a chance to play day one. He's an early enrollee too, which is huge.
100%.
I'll be shocked if he's not in the starting lineup by middle of the season at the latest.
Agreed.
You know, but it's also a position where I think depending on what you do at corner and with the two kids you have, there's some guys at corner that I think could project to be pretty good safeties as well if the need arose. But that is one of the few positions on this roster that you look at and say right now with who's on the roster now, it's just not good enough to be on that level. Now, they're good enough at other places to overcome it, but ideally you don't want to get into situations where you have to win games because of that group. It's just not – it's not on that level that it needs to be. There are some of those positions, but they're not alone. There's some other teams that are really good that have shaky secondary. I mean, I'll take maybe Ohio State's safeties over Notre Dame's, maybe.
Not their corners.
Definitely not taking their corners. Definitely not. Definitely, definitely not. Let's get to some more questions here. That's a good one, Matt. Appreciate that. Here's one from Jason Sexton. Not sure what the IB crew thinks of him or how realistic it is, but I like Tanner McKee from Stanford. Could use another year to increase his draft stock. A month ago, I'd have said, why are we wasting time talking about Tanner McKee? Why, if you're a quarterback that wants to go to play in the NFL, would you leave Stanford and not play for David Shaw, who's one of the better quarterback developers in the country, in my opinion? And, I mean, he turned Davis Mills into a third-round pick despite the kid hardly ever playing. Now, Davis Mills has talent. What I'm saying is he developed into that point. Quarterback development has not been David Shaw's problem. But now David Shaw's gone. And so that might change things a little bit. If Tanner McKee entered the portal, Brian Smith, would you make a phone call?
I would gauge interest. I mean, with what Notre Dame had last year from the portal, is McKee as good or better than what they had last year?
Meaning Jack Cohn, or what the options were for this year?
Cohn.
Like McKee down slow. Okay. He's not as experienced, but right. I think he's got better NFL talent.
His arm is pretty good.
Yeah.
So,
and he'd be playing behind a pretty darn good offensive line.
That's what I mean. Like, if you can run play action on second and four at your leisure with his arm, life is pretty good.
Yeah.
That's how I would look at it. Number seven, assuming he's healthy next year, is going to run for 1,500 yards. You don't have to
still run the ball a ton. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're not going to really change their offense, but David, even though they switched it up a lot because they just didn't have the guys to run power football like they did before. He did what he had to. But now that he's gone, I mean, I've heard different rumors about who Stanford's going to go after, but that's a terrible job.
Right.
It's a terrible job.
You're just not going to get support.
You know, the administration does not want to let in the kids they need to play the same spots we bitch about with Notre Dame. Corner and stuff is really hard. You think it's bad for Notre Dame? You have no idea.
Yeah. So, and it's not. It's much easier for Notre Dame to get high school kids in than Stanford. It's just harder for Notre Dame kids to keep those kids eligible than it is at Stanford. That's pretty much a well-known fact in the college football world. Yeah, it's not a great job. His lack of mobility is the only concerning thing for me.
Yeah, he's a pocket kid.
Yeah.
He's a pocket. But you're not running RPO all day. You're not.
No. Well, you can run RPO. You can't run read.
Well, my definition is the quarterback can move.
Right. Yeah. You're going to run the Sarkisian versions of RPOs, which is
okay. I mean,
pull and throw. Right. I mean, but you're not doing stuff that like USC was doing with Caleb Williams last night. You know, where you're pulling and getting on the perimeter, pulling and keeping and things like that, or what you would do with Tyler Buchner, things like you're not doing that stuff. He is a pocket passer. I like Tanner McKee's tools. This will be a conversation we'll have. There's just some other guys that I might like a little better.
I'm not saying he's
my. I'm not saying, I'm just giving my.
Yeah. I agree. He wouldn't be from who I expect to go in the portal. And there's a few kids that. Some people that are here probably if they came in and I said they should look at, they'd be like, why? It's because their school they're attached to. Quarterbacks develop differently. Like we knew Benjamin Morrison was going to be an NFL player.
Right.
The film is I talked to somebody at Notre Dame and they're like, he's 3-0.
Right.
You know, and it's just like, so quarterback is just unbelievably mental. So many of the kids that come out and I watch them throw at a 7-on-7 or something, like, okay, but these are basic 1 and 2 read concepts.
Yeah.
And they don't have somebody trying to hit them. Quarterback is ungodly difficult. Yeah. So if a guy goes to a small school and makes it, hint, there's a certain guy in Buffalo that's done that. It's pretty good. It just happens. You can't look at the school they're coming from once they enter the portal. Yeah. Can't do it because it is random.
Like the thing I do like about McKee with the big arm, he would fit Notre Dame's run, play action, get the ball downfield, take shots with the big receivers look. But I think Tyler Van Dyke fits that as well. I think Devin Leary would fit that. That's another name that people brought up. Michael Rudiger said, would you jump on Leary if he jumps in the portal? But I'll answer this next, Michael, but just to finish up on McKee, if that was the guy that Notre Dame got, I'd be fine. I'd be good with that. I'd be real good with that. It's just he's another guy that you look at, and he's thrown 15 picks the last 2 years. It's just when you watch his film, you're kind of like, you understand why. He played behind a terrible offensive line, and he can't get away from it. Like Jeff, it's not always about bad decisions. It's like he threw a pick against USC early in the game where it's like the ball gets tipped, like goes to his receiver's hands, and it's like it's picked off. It's like stuff like that. He would have such better talent around him than he's got at Stanford right now, especially up front. Well, I shouldn't say better talent, better coaching and better talent, but not quite. I mean, they've got some talent on the offensive line at Stanford. Just coached horribly. So, that would be a name that I would look at. But another name is Devin Leary. So I've kind of gone back and forth on Devin Leary, Brian, because number one, I love Devin Leary as a player. Everybody knows that. We ranked him as one of the 5 best quarterbacks in the country coming into the season. Had a great year last year. It's just the injury history is what concerns me.
Yeah.
He's
got an upper and a lower that are serious.
Yes. And the upper one, the most recently was an upper one, so you don't know how that's going to affect his throwing. But I will say this, getting Kenny Minchie makes me a lot more willing to take that chance if that's the best option out there, because I don't want to play Kenny Minchie as a freshman. I don't. But between Drew Pine, Tyler Buchner, and Kenny Minchie, if your transfer guy, assuming everybody stays, and Angeli, if 3 of those 4 guys are still on your roster, with a grad transfer. I feel like if that kid doesn't pan out, you've got some pretty good options that can play for you, you know, with Buckner coming back. But I just don't want a roster with a bunch of injury question marks. That's my big concern with looking at a kid like Devin Leary. But if you could tell me he's going to be healthy, I'd say, yeah, I'd definitely take a look at him. There's no question. I mean, he's a really good football player. And then you put him on Notre Dame's roster with the guys that they have, you're like, boy, that kid fits that pretty well. You know, would he be my top guy? I don't know if I really have a top guy right now. You know, so and another one that was asked, Brian, is the kid from from Clemson, DJ. Absolutely not.
Something's wrong there. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, it was bad look. Really, really, really bad look.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
All right, here's some more questions as we wrap up here. Let's get down to here. Brian, TJ says, who's the tight end you mentioned from Nebraska? I don't know if I mentioned a tight end from Nebraska. I talked about we've talked about the 2024 tight end from Nebraska named Carter Nelson that Notre Dame was looking at. I don't know if that's who you're referring to. We have a question here from we already got to that one. We have Patrick Tolan with a super chat. Thank you, Patrick. Could Notre Dame bring someone like Shaw on staff, or would there be interest from either side with quarterbacks they will have on the roster in the upcoming years? Man, if you could somehow get David Shaw as part of your football program, that's a win. I don't think they're – I mean, that's
– I can't imagine that not being an automatic, to be honest.
If he wanted to come, like, mentor Tommy, I'd take that in a freaking heartbeat.
I know he's had some family problems in the past. Yeah. Like his brother was sick at one point, and that. My guess is the guy's wore out and wants to sit on his butt.
Yeah.
Which
I think an analyst job could be something that could attract him. You don't go on the road recruiting. Oh. You're just sitting in the office. You can go, you know, do whatever you got to do. I think he's going to do TV stuff. I think he's going to spend time with his family and then do some TV stuff.
He'd be perfect for
Pac-12
game of the week.
Because he does such a great job on the draft stuff. I mean, he's excellent on the NFL draft stuff. Like, he's natural on TV. He enjoys it. He's smart. But, yeah, if you know, because everybody talked about David Cutcliffe and all that. If Tommy was open to it and you could get David Shaw on your staff for like a year or two to let him just recover mentally and emotionally with his family, whatever. Dude, you don't even need him to be on campus. Just break down film and do Zoom meetings with them. You know what I mean? Like, just get them on campus during football season so we can watch the kids work out and give some tips and stuff. Like, that'd be phenomenal. But I don't see it happening. But, yeah, absolutely, I would do that.
That's an 100%. Easy one. Yes. 100%.
He's one of the best offensive minds in the game. Like, look, where he has failed in recent years is, like, with recruiting, putting a staff together, being too loyal to assistant coaches that are clearly failures. Like, those are the things that have cost him at Stanford. Not replacing guys like, you know, Derek Mason with equal hires. I mean, Derek Mason is such a significantly better coach than Lance Anderson. And that was a big drop-off defensively. And then you just leave Lance Anderson there for years to do a bad job. You know, those type of things are things that cost him. There's never been a question about whether or not David Shaw is still not one of the best offensive minds in the game. He flat out is. And he is much more in line with who Tommy is than, you know, someone who, you know, Rich Rodriguez, you know, wanted to do something or something like that. Like, no thanks. I mean, yeah, offensive mind, but that's a completely different universe as an offense. David Shaw's a pro-style guy. Tommy's a pro-style guy. They like different things. I think that'd be a great mentorship if that was something that both sides are willing to do. I don't think that's going to happen. You know, like to you said, usually guys when guys retire like this, Brian, they want to take a break and clear their heads and take care of their families and do what they, you know, take a step back. But I'd still make the call. I mean, I would have made the call 30 seconds after the announcement was made. Like it would have, if it took me that long. Well, hey, man, what are you doing next year?
I bet you Saban's already inquired.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
Not even if I make this.
That would just be so, make me so disgusted. If they replaced Bill O'Brien with David Shaw, I'd be so upset. Oh, I'd be so God. Upset. Yeah. So, but yes, David Shaw did retire. It was time. He had done everything he could at Stanford. They weren't supporting him. You could tell he was just kind of coasting there. And I get it, because you know, why am I go bust my tail knowing I'm not going to get most of these kids in school? And then when I do find these kids, some school's going to come in with an NIL deal or they're going to offer them early enrollment and our school's not going to support it. And it's just like, I get it, you know. But his time as head coach was over. I just think it was one of those things where it doesn't mean he hasn't lost his mind is still there. He's still a great football mind. All right. Yeah, so here's
now the question is, what's he going to be able to do long term now that he's is he done? That's my only question.
Yeah.
He might be.
Yeah.
He might be.
He's at that age where, you know, he's made a lot of money at Stanford. You know, he's going to be a guy that, you know, he's 50 years old. So he's not old, but he's at that age where, you know what, I'm just going to go be a TV personality for 10 years and make a ton of money. And, it's, you know, the life is much better than being a football coach and do draft stuff, do game day stuff and make good money doing that. And then I get to chill and, you know, live my life. Does he get that itch to – this is the question. Guys do that thinking that's what I'm going to do. Like, I genuinely think Urban Meyer is twice retired thinking he was not going to coach anymore. But then he just says, I can't not coach. Other guys are Bill, like, who was the guy for the Steelers? Bill Cowher. Like, it just, the itch never came back, you know, just like not enough to take a job, you know.
He could have had as many jobs as he wanted.
Oh, yeah. Some guys just don't ever get that back. So, Skeet Davidson says, did we ever talk about Fickell to Wisconsin? We did not. And Brian, I want to get your thoughts on Luke Fickell taking the Wisconsin job.
There's a lot of different things with this. Anytime a coach, and I start with Notre Dame because I'm a Notre Dame fan, but anytime a coach goes to a school, what's their traditional weakness and does that coach help it? He's a defensive coach, but he's had ridiculously good corners. They've hit the home run on some shots in the dark at corner. That's just never going to happen like that again. And he wants to play cover one and all this. Wisconsin doesn't get those kids. I'm a little worried about that. Mm-hmm. Two, what's he going to do for his coordinators and stuff? Who's he going to bring in? Is Jim Leonard leaving? The staff is really my concern. They're never going to – they're not Stanford, but they have really high academic standards for a state school. They struggle to recruit elite skill guys outside the numbers forever. Can he improve it? Does his staff improve it? All of that goes together. It's all about recruiting and staff. He can coach.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's a great recruiter anyway, and they hit the home run when they had a certain guy who's now in South Bend as well.
Two guys who are now in South Bend.
Chad also.
Three guys that were really good recruiters.
And it's like, and I'm not picking on Fickell. He's a very good football coach. But there are certain schools, just based on proximity, that are up against it at corner, D-line, et cetera. Wisconsin's one of them. So – do I think he's going to improve it? Well, it's going to be better than it was. I mean, that guy ran it into the ground.
Right.
But at the same time, I'm not sure they're going to get an elite hire out of this. We'll see. So,
I think he'll be a slightly better version of Bo Pelini. That's what I think he'll be. An 8-10 win coach every year. Yep. Mostly 9-10.
4-10-2, but it's in the Big Ten West.
Right.
And when they play USC, they'll get beat 38.
But that's going to change soon. When USC and UCLA jump, they're going to get rid of the East and West, I believe, and do different type. I think they're going to go to pods is what I think I read that they're going to do. I could be wrong on that.
Doesn't have the ability to play on the perimeter with those.
Right.
We just don't.
No. And I don't think they're going to be able to – he's going to have an easier time getting those kids at Cincinnati than he would at Wisconsin.
Cincinnati has zero. academic standards for athletes.
Some of the pushback that people have given me when I say he's not a strong recruiter is, well, he was known as a really good recruiter at Ohio State. It's much easier to sell that. Number one,
look, that's
Ohio it's your State. Alma mater. You're going to have a different passion about your alma mater, right? And number two, you're recruiting in-state kids. Like, Wisconsin can't make a living on when they got to go to Illinois, they got to go to Florida, they got to go to Texas, they got to go to California, they got to go all over the country and get kids. And you're just, he doesn't strike me as a guy. Now, again, Brian, to your point is, let me see the staff he puts together.
That's everything.
But man, I'll just say this. I was not impressed by the replacement hires he made when he lost coaches this last cycle, last couple cycles. I didn't like the replacement he made for Marcus Freeman. I didn't like the replacement he made for Mike Denbrock. I didn't think he did a great job in making replacements, to me, to be honest with you.
I'm curious if Jim Leonard even considers sticking around. I don't know the guy. I don't know much about him. I doubt it.
Yeah.
He'll probably be irked.
Another call that I would make if it was up to me. So,
100%. Yeah. I mean, he knows football.
Yep, absolutely. And then I think that we're getting down to the last couple. The worst 2K big man HD or big man HD asks, will Notre Dame look at a transfer receiver this offseason? That will quarterback, receiver, and edge are three positions that you will definitely see Notre Dame be actively looking in the portal for this year. Then Ricky Harris asks, Brian, this is a long shot. You may not dig this question, but if Tom Clements wanted to come and tutor Tommy as far as quarterback coaching, would you think about that? Brian, I don't know enough about Tom Clements as a coach to speak on this. Are you more from, I mean, obviously he's got the Notre Dame and he's been a QB coach and a coordinator in the NFL, but I don't know enough about his success or his knowledge or anything else other than his resume to speak on that. So I don't know if you have an opinion on that.
I know a little bit just from one of our former mutual friends, Somoji. Somoji liked the guy and all that. He's a pretty strong personality. And when he didn't get the Notre Dame job, when he tried to get it at one point, he was pretty irked. He's an opinionated guy. Those kind of people as quote-unquote helpers, I'm not so sure that's going to work out real well. And I doubt Tommy is probably looking for a lot of – guys don't want people looking over their shoulder. It's just part of sport. It sucks for the team. But from a human being standpoint, I understand. I'd be shocked if Tommy would accept that, whether or not Freeman wanted to do it or not. Right. Just my opinion.
Then last one, we'll get to this one. This is going to be the last question because we got to get running. Brian has already given us way more of his time than I asked him to give, so we appreciate that. But this is something that's fascinating. Blake Jar says, thoughts on Matt Rule, Nebraska. I live in Omaha, and some of their former players who hate that. There are some former players who hate the hire. I heard from a guy that used to do some contributing for Irish Breakdown who lives in Nebraska who also tweeted about this, and I followed up with him on Twitter, and it was like, there's a lot of people in Nebraska that don't like this hire. And I think those people out of their freaking minds, like, this is as good of a hire. And I don't even mean this is like, well, this is as good as you're going to get. I mean, I cannot dream of a better scenario than for Nebraska right now, other than like Tom Osborne gets reincarnated as a 35-year-old coach. I mean, I don't know what they wanted. This guy is a really good football coach. He brings toughness and discipline, and he can recruit multiple parts of the country, which is exactly what Nebraska needs right now. He's the anti-Scott Frost. I don't know why. If I'm a Nebraska fan, I'd be doing backflips right now getting Matt Rule. Like, you caught such a break by him getting fired by the Panthers. So thoughts, because I think people are insane for not at Nebraska for not thinking this is an absolute home run hire, in my opinion.
Well, this is probably the same fans that still think Nebraska should be ranked in the top five every year. I'm just going to be blunt about it. Good luck getting this, like we were talking about with Wisconsin, getting the players outside the numbers to go to Nebraska in today's political climate and today's world. They can't, what, they recruit maybe five kids in state a year? Maybe.
Yeah.
It's for scholarship. It's about players. Yeah. It's about players. I'll put it to you this way. If you made Nick Saban 10 years younger, and he took over the Nebraska job tomorrow, he probably would not win a national title. It'd be possible. It'd be easier. But you still got to get certain guys at certain spots. It's just about the dude.
Well,
the end and corner being the top two. It's hard to get those kids to Nebraska. Rule has developed three-star talent. When he took over Baylor, that was a dumpster fire. And they were really good, really quick. Yeah. He can develop talent. He has an eye for it. he seems to like recruiting at least some, and he took Temple over. I mean, good Lord, was that a horrible team. So
I think Nebraska's fan base is also very unrealistic about who they are as a program. Well, that's I think the right coach at Nebraska can win there to the point where they are a consistent 10-win team who maybe once every decade has that team that maybe can make a run.
Well, yeah,
because they can get JUCOs, they can get West Coast kids, they can recruit Texas. I mean, you know, if you have someone who's a really good evaluator, that's going to – because here's where they will get the athletes, Brian. Finding that three-star kid from Florida that the SEC passes on. Finding that three-star kid from Texas, the Caleb Smith like Notre Dame is pushing for, right? That kind of kid, right? Finding the Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. You have to have a really good evaluator, and I think he is that. I think Matt Rhule is – he did it at Temple. That's how he won at Temple. He wasn't beating Penn State and Ohio State and Michigan and Notre Dame and, you know, teams like that for kids from Jersey and New York and Florida. He was finding those kids that were low floor, maybe high-ceiling guys, those kids those sleeper type of kids that he could develop. And the other thing, too, is Nebraska had two spurts of greatness from a championship level of football. They had the back-to-back titles in 70 and 71, and then they won three titles in 5 years under Osborne, and two and a half titles in 3 years, in 5 years in the 90s. That's it. Right? Like, that's their football. They had really good teams for a long time, but they could never consistently win championships. I mean, again, do I think they can get back to that – between 71 and 94, I actually do think they can. I do believe Nebraska, where they're positioned, can find – because here's – you know what kids that are like that would go to that area, Brian? Kids who are just looking for a chance. Kids who got bypassed by all the Texas schools or the Florida schools. If you find someone who's a really good evaluator, you can get enough of those kids to be a pretty good football team. But the JUCO ranks – this is the big thing. The JUCO ranks don't produce kids like they used to. And that's where Nebraska would find those kids. A lot, you know, the linebackers and the DBs and stuff, they would find a lot of those JUCO kids, and now those kids are just they're not producing those kids like that anymore, and so I think that's hurt them as well. But your point, yes, that's what Matt Rhule is. He will find those three-star kids from Texas that you're like, you beat North Texas for this kid, this is a joke, and you cry about it on signing day, and then 3 years later you're crying about why did this kid leave early for the NFL. You know what I mean? That's who Matt Rhule is, in my opinion. And that's why I think it's a great hire. And again, toughness and discipline, two things that program is desperately lacking I think he brings.
Think about how many close games they lost in the last 2 years where it was a false start penalty that screwed a drive or ball secured, just something dumb, self-inflicted, to your point. They should have won more than six games both of the last 2 years, and they didn't finish 500 either time.
Right. Yep. No doubt. No doubt. So Tenday said Nebraska needs to go the JUCO route. Give me my props, coach. Hey, Tenday, I said it first, man, so I'm not giving you any props. I'm just kidding. But, I mean, that's the thing, too, is when you look at programs, Brian, we've talked about this with, like, Notre Dame, and people say, you know, why is it harder to recruit at Notre Dame now than it was under the Lou Holtz era? Well, because you could find a Ricky Waters and a Rocket Ismail in Pennsylvania and the Jerome Bettises and the Todd Lights and those guys in Michigan where those states aren't producing those kids anymore. You got to go much further away than Lou Holtz had to go. Now, Lou would go to Texas to get some kids and Florida to get some kids, Brian. But if you look at the elite athletes they had on that 88 team, a lot of them were Northern kids. Anthony Johnson was from South Bend. Todd Light was from Michigan. Jerome Bettis was from Michigan. He wasn't on the 88 team. Ricky Waters was from Pennsylvania. Rocket Ismail was from Pennsylvania. Now, you got the Pat Terrell from Florida's. You had guys like that in the early 90s. You had, you know, where was Tom Carter from? Was he from Texas or from Florida?
Him and Terrell played on the same freaking high school team.
Okay, so he was a Florida kid, right? And you've got Bobby Taylor was from Texas, I believe, right? So, I mean, you started getting some of those kids, but that was after Notre Dame had won a title. Winning a title opened up that door that you may not have had. Early on, he was winning with Northern kids. Michigan and Indiana and Illinois and Pennsylvania don't produce the athletes that they used to. And we've talked about this. It's population movement. You know, it's
100%.
Jobs are now in the Southeast and the Southwest more than they were in the North, you know, as the Industrial Revolution kind of came to an end and, you know, not as much coal and steel and all these other kind of factories start more jobs start getting shipped overseas and start importing those goods from overseas and all that other stuff. You see jobs start moving. And that's why you see the population shift. So now, you know, instead of Pennsylvania being, you know, in the 20s in the Electoral College, they're at 18 now, and they're going to lose another couple here in the next go round because you don't have as many people. And so as that shifts, you've got to recognize there's more kids coming out of North Carolina now. There's more kids coming out of Georgia now. And so that's kind of the difference. And Nebraska, you know, the thing for Nebraska is it's the JUCO thing. The JUCO ranks still produce kids, just not as many as it used to. JUCO used to be a much more prominent option, especially when there was Prop 48. Prop 48 killed JUCOs, like, because you started getting that allowed more kids to start going to college and sitting out a year, you know, and as they've kind of lowered the academic standards to be eligible in the NCAA, fewer kids have the need to go to JUCO. Now your 7 kids go to JUCO that are either getting trouble or aren't recruited by anybody. You're not seeing as many kids go the route of, you know, having to, you know, go in the JUCO route because they couldn't get into school somewhere. Those kids are much more rare now than they used to be. So I don't think that's a good thing. You know, I think a lot of these kids could have benefited from going to a JUCO and playing for 2 years as opposed to sitting on the bench somewhere else for 2 years not getting coached. But, you know, NCAA doesn't care about actually helping kids if you haven't figured that out by now. So anyway.
Yep.
That's it, Brian. Great show today, man. Really appreciate you joining me. Always a pleasure having you. Congrats on being down the Lone Star State now, making that move from Florida over to Texas and what went with that. So we appreciate that. We'll love to get you back on again, of course, here very soon as we get closer to signing day. We're going to have a lot of recruiting topics to talk about here over the next month. So for Brian Smith, I'm Brian Driscoll. Thank you all so much. Hit that like button, hit the subscribe button, hit the notification bell, share this podcast, sign up for the message boards at boards.irishbreakdown.com. Check out our main website at irishbreakdown.com and have a great rest of your week. And we will talk to you again very, very soon on the Irish Breakdown Podcast.